So let's take a deeper look now at how the Obama administration and black leaders around the country have reacted to the crisis in Ferguson. Peniel Joseph is founding director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy at Tufts University. And Professor Joseph, so Eric Holder is there, but some have argued that it's President Obama himself who should go to Ferguson. What do you think?
Well, I think in terms of President Obama's track record, it's understandable about him not going to Ferguson. I think he handles crises in a very sort of measured way, where at times people want bold response. But no, I think the president of the United States should go down to Ferguson. I think it's ground zero right now for what's happening in terms of civil rights and just issues of citizenship and democracy. So I would like to see the president there. But in lieu of the president, I think the attorney general is a strong statement.
Now, you've also said in the recent past that you believe that President Obama has run the gamut of responses to what's happening in Ferguson. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about what do you mean by that?
Well, I think initially he was overly cautious. Initially, there was silence. I mean, the sad part is that there was a statement released by the White House after the actor Robin Williams died, before a statement being released about Michael Brown. Then he made a statement that was sort of calling for peace. And as things escalated, then he came out with a much stronger statement saying that the Attorney General and the FBI would investigate what's going on, because obviously there was a huge image problem for the United States once you saw tanks in the streets of an American city. And there was really no major rioting going on. This would be what we called in the 60s a small civil disturbance, honestly.
Now, you just recently published a piece in Newsweek magazine, which I think asks a very provocative question. I mean, you even say it's one of the burning questions of the moment right now. And that is, you know, what does or what should racial equality in the era of Obama look like? And I'm wondering what your answer is to that.
The answer is basically that if we got rid of institutional racial barriers, what you would see is much more of a connection between white and black and Latino, racial advancement, and also racial disadvantagement. Then the next question we would have are things like gender equality and things like class and income inequality. So the problem for all of us is that in the age of Obama, you've got a black president and first lady and attorney general, but racial inequality not only persists for most African Americans, most of the 43 million, in certain cases it's gotten worse, and that goes to for racial segregation, poor public schools, now mass incarceration. So there really is a new Jim Crow in the United States. And I think the young people who are throwing Molotov cocktails in Ferguson, they realize that even though they can't articulate that and they're not necessarily going to write essays about it.
No, but don't those points exactly support the notion that perhaps President Obama should be doing more right now? Because, I mean, he is the world's most powerful man. He's the president of the United States. He's the nation's first black president. And so therefore, if anyone has the ability to be the face of the new black leadership, it's him.
Well, he's also president of the entire United States. So I think part of Obama's conundrum is that if he were to be that bold, I think he's spent his whole life being very, very careful to try to resist stereotypes of being an angry or rash black man, right? So I think the 60s are interesting because John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, they took at times heroic action, but they took this action because of demonstrations and crises that were happening in the street. So what we need in our own contemporary time is a social movement that's compelling enough to force and inspire the president of the United States into bolder actions.
Now, this question of leadership in this moment right now is very interesting, and you've written about it in The Root. And I just wanted to play a piece of tape for you, because a little earlier this week, the Reverend Jesse Jackson was in Ferguson, and he was speaking to people about what he thinks the residents of Ferguson need to do in order to really improve the situation there. And here's what he said.
In Ferguson, if we go door to door, hear me now, and register 5,000 voters, you can take the whole town.
So he's talking about what has been a long-standing sort of keystone of the civil rights movement, and that is civil engagement, right? You're just getting people to register to vote and to go vote and to have their voices heard that way. But I wonder, amongst the young African Americans who we see so much frustration and discontent in, is that a message that's falling on deaf ears right now?
Yeah, I think in Ferguson, that message hasn't resonated. Yeah, absolutely. We live in a country where sometimes poor people and people who've been arrested before try to vote. And there are people who are telling them that if they've even been arrested, they no longer have the right to vote, when that's not true. Voting has become a privilege in the United States rather than a right. And you can see that trickling all the way down to Ferguson. So I think there's a way to make that message resonate. But we also need younger leaders. We need, you know, the next generation of leadership, both at the local level in Ferguson and nationally.
Well, this isn't an unfamiliar challenge, though, in the civil rights movement, because in your piece in The Root, you also remind us that the Reverend Martin Luther King was actually heckled in 1965 after he went to Watts following the riots in L.A. there. So it's not as if there was ever, you know, a fully unified vision behind who or what civil rights leadership should be. But what's the difference? What's the primary difference between then and now? It seems like there were fewer potential leaders on the scene now.
Well, I think the difference between then and now is about racial progress, but also racial confusion, because I think in 50 years ago, African Americans and whites as well knew that there was a problem of racial oppression and racial segregation. Many, many people collectively tried to do something about it. I think we live in a time period, and that's the contradictions of the age of Obama, where having a black president, having black celebrities and black business leaders and political leaders has really put forth a narrative that basically racism is over. People talk about post-racialism, and you can succeed if you want to. Now, factually, that's not correct, but that's a powerful cultural narrative. So it's very, very hard to get to the bottom of the problem now, because we focus on black elites who've been successful. We have to do two things. One, we have to get to the root of the problem, which is poverty, unemployment, police brutality, a criminal justice system that's run amok, and real continual racial segregation, the new Jim Crow. But we also have to tell our young people a new story. So it's a story that's not about victimology or blaming people, but it's about telling them factually, the United States of America and American democracy has always been a work in progress. Again, for those living in Ferguson, they realize that things aren't great for them, that they go to terrible schools. Michael Brown went to a school that had lost its accreditation. And so there's real apathy and alienation there. So we have to tell them a different story. And part of that story has to do with not relying on President Obama or top-down leadership, but organizing at the grassroots. There's political progressive ideas that go beyond what we're hearing on cable networks and what we're hearing on public radio. And those voices deserve to be part of the debate. They deserve to be part of the dialogue, because that's how we got social change in the 60s. It doesn't mean we believe everything those voices say, but they add a new dimension to social and political progress in the United States when those voices are included.
Peniel Joseph is the director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy and a professor of history at Tufts University. His latest book is on the civil rights leader Stokely Carmichael. It's called Stokely: A Life. Professor Joseph, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.